This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I'm hoping to beat the snow. It hasn't actually started yet, but from what everyone says, it's coming in. We're supposedly going to get, I think they're saying 4 to 8 inches tonight, but we're going to get a little snow and a little sleet mixed in. And the first part of that, so it hasn't actually started snowing. It's actually about 6:25. I'm headed home. I had dinner with a friend, and then I had a few supplies to pick up. I'll tell you about that in a minute. But, so I think I'm probably gonna make it home in plenty of time. We'll be fine. Had a few errands to run because tonight, hopefully I will get this done. Tonight I'm packaging up the beta copies of Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree, which is my little children's novel. So that's cool. I handed out some of the ones that are just local today, and I'm going to package up the rest of them tonight, get mailing labels and postage on them, drop them in the mail tomorrow, and then the beta readers will have until March 1st to give it a read and then get back with me so their names can be in the back of the book. After I get this done tonight, then I start working on the next series, which is called Realmers, I think, and I've got the first book sketched in. I sketched it in as a treatment, over 10 years ago, so I'm going to pull that out and work on that. It's a little bit interesting because there's actually 24 books, I think, in this series, which means it's a big series. They're going to be short books, 100, 150 pages, kind of space opera, Flash Gordon type, Star Trek type books where they're serialized with cliffhangers and all that kind of stuff. But in order to do that right, of course, I have to know where it's going. So I'm in the process now of building a map for all 24 books. And that's going fine, but that's my next job as the beta readers are reading Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree. Then I'm going to be working on that map so that when I put out the final version of Amanda and the Skleeberry Tree, I can just drop in. So to send out the beta books, I had to run by Staples and get some of that non-ecologically approved bubble wrap. Oh, too bad. And get that packaging done and get those addresses. So this week, it's episode 45, by the way. I always have a big sign at the top of my notes say episode 45. This week I was going to talk about epigenetics. There were a couple of things that happened this week, and a news story in particular that I heard about that I thought, is very interesting. I think I'll talk about that instead. And I told a buddy that I just had dinner with, I told him, yes, today the podcast will be about football. And he looked at me and he said, that's not usually a topic you talk about. I said, no, it isn't. But it is applicable today. My son-in-law is from Wisconsin. He was a Green Bay Packer fan all his life until he made an interesting discovery that he was, in fact, not a Green Bay Packer fan. He was a Brett Favre fan. And when Brett Favre retired and then ended up someplace else and eventually ended up back with the Minnesota Vikings, he became a Minnesota Vikings fan. So I am always looking for ways to deepen my relationship with my son-in-law, which I have a very good relationship with him. I am truly blessed. He is a fine young man. As you may or may not know, whether you care about football or not, the Minnesota Vikings actually made it into the finals. I think it was the finals. I don't know this stuff. Made it into the finals playing against the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. And my son-in-law was fairly certain that the Vikings weren't going to win. And I thought, I could just put that on in the background as I'm doing a little work on Sunday afternoon and Sunday evening. And that way I'll have something to talk to my son-in-law about. It was great sadness. It was sadness. I watched about the first 20 minutes of it and kind of got a flavor for the game. It was a very good game. It was nothing wrong with the game at the beginning. And then I toddled off and did some work because it was distracting me, so I shut it off. And then I thought, well, I'll come back in about an hour or so, I don't know. And came back, and the score was close, and things were moving, so I kind of kept it on in the background while I did some other things. But the short synopsis, for those of you who didn't see the game, is that unquestionably, the Vikings should have won that game. Now, well, nothing is ever certain in life, but the Vikings at one point should have taken advantage of an opportunity that in all likelihood would have won them the game. And the reason they didn't take advantage of that opportunity was because of what would appear from the outside to be an astoundingly bad tactical decision by Brett Favre. So that's why it's great sadness. Now, I will be the first to say that, as I mentioned either last week or the last week before that, it's always easy to figure out how someone else isn't doing their job and how they should do better. And I will give you that Brett Favre's performance this entire season has been spectacular for a 40-year-old man in the NFL. As one of my friends said, that's like 80 years old in football years. It really is. So that's the first thing. He has done spectacular this year. Second thing is he just got pounded Sunday. I mean, just pounded. My bubble wrap is rolling around and back. I'm going to try to get it so it's not rolling around so much. He just got pounded the whole game, and he had to be sore and hurting at the end of it. Plus, that particular stadium is supposedly the loudest stadium in the NFL, and that had to be distracting. And, you know, the guy's just tired. But it was a very bad tactical call. It just was. There's no question about it. He decided to throw as opposed to just hobbling forward about 10 yards when he was wide open and bringing in the field goal kickers, and they would have had every opportunity to win the game. So that was sadness, and I was talking to my son-in-law about it. I'm a little dry, so I'm going to get my bottle of water. I was talking to my son-in-law about it, and I said, you know, I said, for me, this was just kind of a classic illustration of flesh and spirit. Because just prior to this play, either the play before it or the play before it, Brett Favre made a spectacular throw. It could not have been any more perfect. I mean, it was an amazing throw. He threw it right into this guy's hands as this guy is booking it across the field, and the guy's hands are like at his stomach level, and he's got this defender right on top of him, and he just, I drilled it. It was beautiful. And then, the next play after that, he throws this wild throw when he should have just run forward a little ways, and it's intercepted and goes into overtime, and the Saints win the game. But I said, this is indicative of how things work in our lives. You know, we take some risks, we accomplish something, we win, and then the flesh starts going, oh, you are so amazing. You just did such a good job. You can do anything. And it just is building us up and building us up and building us up. And then when we get in that crucial decision point, it goes, throw it, throw it, throw it. And away we go. We throw it, and the split second we throw it, and we actually assess the situation as opposed to just reacting automatically to the situation, we realize that was a bad decision. So the question is, what can we do about that? What can we do to kind of keep that thing from happening? Because it has happened to all of us. All of us have had those situations that moments after we've done something, we've realized that was a very bad thing to do. And maybe some of the things we do just result in our own embarrassment, or maybe they cost us some money. There's very few of us who can say that one of those bad decisions cost us the championship game in the national finals before the Super Bowl, because we don't operate at that sphere. But all of us have had this experience. Well, in thinking about all that, I heard a report on NPR yesterday morning, I think it was. And it was so good that I actually looked it up, found the link to it, and sent the link to my son-in-law. And I said, listen to this. You'll love this. If you want to listen to it yourself, because it is, even after I tell you kind of the gist of it, you should go listen to it because it's really great. It's very, very well done. Go to NPR and look for Willpower and the Slacker Brain. Look up Willpower and the Slacker Brain and just listen to the broadcast. It is fun. The synopsis is this, and I think it has some very interesting things to tell us about our lives and our decision-making capabilities, and our decision-making processes, I should say. They talk about a marketing specialist in a university who did a study. The study was very simple. Brought in a group of people, gave them a number on a piece of paper, and said, memorize this number, and then walk down the hall and tell it to a person in the room at the end of the hall, something like this. What they didn't tell the people is that some of them received a number that only had two digits, like 12. Some of them received a number that had seven digits, like 14285714. They asked them, these people, to memorize this number, then walk down the hall. That really wasn't the study. The study actually came in a moment, because as the people were walking down the hall, they had someone else walk up to them and interrupt them and say, thank you so much for participating in our study today. We wanted to give you some kind of thank you. And while there isn't money involved, we do have some food for you. We either have a chocolate piece of chocolate cake or a bowl of fruit. Which would you like? And then they kept a record of who received what numbers and which dessert they chose. Here's the interesting thing. By a wide majority, the people who only had to memorize two digits chose the fruit salad. The people who had to memorize seven digits chose the chocolate cake. Now then, as I was talking to a buddy about this, he said, okay, so what? This is where it started getting interesting for me. Because the people who were on talking about this study started talking about the kind of latest understanding of how the brain works. And they just came out and said something that I have been saying for years and years and years. That there are two systems that operate within the human brain. I will use their terminology. And after this is all said and done, I will tell you why I don't think their terminology is the best terminology, but it gets the idea across. In their terminology, one system that we have is the rational brain, the one that's trying to make the best decision, trying to evaluate what's going on so that it can make a good decision. The other part of our brain, the other system that we have going on in our brain is what they called the emotional system, or the emotional automatic system, or the emotional unconscious system. And they said these two systems are competing constantly for our attention and for our will to make decisions. well, you know what? That sounds just like flesh versus spirit to me. And it's really true that we do have this competition. And what the author of this study proposed is, in his words, our rational system can be easily distracted. And our rational system is not that strong. And when it gets engaged and when it gets preoccupied, it allows the emotional automatic system to surge forward and control our decision-making process. So their conclusion was, the reason that the people who memorized two numbers chose the fruit salad is because they had extra rational generating ability available to them. And since they were only trying to memorize two numbers, they could look down and say, you know, fruit is really better for me. I'll just go with the fruit. Whereas when they were working on seven numbers, it required enough concentration and enough attention from the rational mind that it didn't have any more to give. And so, therefore, it gave the emotional automatic system the upper hand, and it could say, cake, I want cake, need cake, gonna have cake, love cake, 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 cake. Okay, okay, I believe there is some of that going on, and in fact, that very well could explain some of the mechanisms, because, frankly, I have seen this type of behavior. When you get sick, when you're tired, when you're worn out, you do have a tendency to just pick up whatever the flesh is suggesting and just go with it. That's why it's important to be rested. That's why it's important to, when you're in the midst of a decision, to slow down, take a beat, quiet your heart, think about what you're doing. However, what the people who were talking about the study did from there was, that's actually my phone buzzing. I didn't shut that off. And that's my son-in-law. I'll call him after we finish this. What the people in the study, sorry, it will quit buzzing in a minute. It's still buzzing. What the people in the study concluded was that the rational mind was so weak that pretty much anything could knock it out. And the emotional automatic system would just take over. And it was really kind of terrible that we as thinking people would be saddled with such a weakling as a rational component. And the cards were really stacked against us. Okay, well, see, I have a couple of problems with that. First of all, I do agree that the flesh is very powerful. I'm getting my mail. The flesh is very powerful, and it's very pervasive, and it often does have the upper hand in people's lives. However, I am not of the opinion that the rational mind is necessarily completely a pushover. It's that people, in my terminology, they don't listen to their spirit. They spend their times developing a habit of listening to their flesh, and in those cases, their quote-unquote rational mind is weak because they haven't exercised it. And so if you keep listening to your flesh and just doing the things that you want to do, whenever you want to do it, however you want to do it, have whatever you want, when I want, then yes, the flesh within you grows, and you're much more susceptible to it when it says, want cake, want cake, want cake, want cake. Okay. Secondarily, I'm backing into my garage, so I'm going to start talking louder. Secondarily, I choose not to call it the emotional, automatic, unconscious component in our brains, because all of those terms come with connotations and leave an impression. And the overall impression that they leave is, well, you can't really do anything about this. It's automatic. It's just emotional, and you can't control your emotions. You know, it's unconscious. You don't even know you're doing it. So it's just the way it is, which I go, time out, because if you've listened to this podcast for any time at all, you know I'm really a big believer in free will, that we have the capability at any time to choose. To choose. We are not powerless. We can always choose. So I don't think it's automatic. I think we have the opportunity to choose. I don't think it's unconscious, in that I don't believe it's just random and driven by desires. And I don't think it's best characterized as being emotional. And here's why. As I've said in the past, as I say in Still Whispers, people give their emotions a pass. Well, that's just how I feel. It's just how I feel. Okay, well, it's not really how you feel, in my mind. It's what you believe. And your beliefs are driving your emotions. And if you change your beliefs, you will change your emotions. And it won't be just how you feel. The simple example I give people is you're driving down the street, someone cuts you off, and you get mad. Okay, why are you mad? Because you believe that that guy cut you off intentionally, he got in your way, and you're trying to go somewhere, and this road belongs to me, and I don't understand why that gets you. I don't know what that guy is doing. Okay, you got all this stuff going on, all these beliefs that are churning around underneath the surface that are then spawning that anger. When in fact, if you would evaluate the beliefs, the anger will evaporate. If you said to yourself, wait, you know what? That guy, he might have just gotten a phone call that his wife's in the hospital. He might have just found out that his daughter needs to be somewhere right now, and his wife wasn't able to pick him up, and he's trying to get over there to get her. I mean, there's a thousand explanations for why he might have pulled in front of you. And a very, very small percentage of them are, he saw you and he was just trying to run you off the road. And yet, the first thing we latch on to is, I'm being inconvenienced here. Why do we latch on to that? Because the flesh within us is not unconscious. It is aware of what's going on around us. It is not automatic. It is planning. And it has chosen a set of beliefs to stir up your emotions, hoping that you will take that bait and vent those emotions, because if it can get you to vent those emotions, it can get you to accept the beliefs that are under it, and the next time the chocolate cake comes around, it can get you to go, cake, need cake, need cake, need cake. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.